And in some ways, I want to hold on to this poem that I just read because there's a marvelous piece of piety and trust. And in some ways, I don't want to be the church that I heard about recently. The person who was saying it was really saying it as this is what made this such a great church. As you drove off from their parking lot, their sort of billboard as you exited the premises said, "Remember, keep the Sabbath holy." Sort of that's the parting. That's the most important thing you could think about as you leave on Sunday, is to keep the Sabbath holy. So there's a mix of all sorts of traditions, and some of us have traditions that are inconsistent. Some of us have traditions that we feel are very oppressive, and many people have absolutely no traditions and give no thought to what you might do on Sunday. And so it's very tricky to understand the fourth commandment. What I want to do is go through some biblical theology about the Sabbath, and then we're going to come to three areas in which I think the Sabbath still matters for us. So if you have your Bibles, we're going to look at a few different passages. Let's start at the beginning in Genesis chapter 2. Just trying to sort of get the lay of the land and understand the context for the fourth commandment and what the Sabbath principle might still mean for us, even though some things have changed. Genesis 2, verse 1, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation." You think, where do we get weeks from? You have a day because of the earth's rotation. You have a month because of the moon's cycles. A year is because of the earth's revolution around the sun. A week is arbitrary. You have a week because God made the world and he rested in a week. It's one of the reasons why I don't make a big push that the church celebrate the church calendar, though if other churches want to, I don't get bent out of shape. But I see that the church calendar the Lord gave us is a weekly calendar. And you celebrate the Lord's Day and the Day of Resurrection, which we'll get to. God rested on the seventh day, not because he was exhausted, but as a way of saying, it is finished. The world is at rest. I can be at rest. The way things were the way things they were supposed to be, and God's work was done. Is the Sabbath, then, a creation ordinance? It doesn't say directly that, therefore, you ought to rest one day in seven. What it says is God rested. But I think there are good reasons for seeing that there is at least a rest principle rooted in creation. God made the seventh day holy. He set it apart that there would be a different day. Exodus 20 says, "Remember the Sabbath." The ground is going back to creation and how God made the world. Mark 2:27, Jesus says, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." That language seems to bring us back that God made the Sabbath for us as a grace to us, all the way back in creation. So you have this creation Sabbath, and you move forward a little bit in redemptive history, and you have the Mosaic Sabbath. And I think a helpful analogy is to look at it sort of like the Mosaic covenant with the promise of Abraham. Abraham got the promise. In Galatians 3 tells us, the law did not annul the promise, but it was added to it. And so you have this principle of rest and Sabbath and creation, and then added to it is the Mosaic covenant. Here in Exodus 20, looks back to creation. Deuteronomy 5, which is the second account of the Ten Commandments, there it's a little bit different if you compare the two. It says, "Remember you were a slave." So it looks at the redemption from Exodus as a type of salvation that lends itself to this principle of rest and the Sabbath. We won't look at these passages because there isn't time. I'll just mention them. Exodus 16, verses 21 through 30. it is worth noting that the first command to Israel as a nation had to do with the Sabbath. Here they were, and they were getting this manna from heaven. They were getting quail, these birds falling that they were going to eat. And their first command as a nation was, God will give you twice as much on the sixth day, so you don't have to get any of it on the seventh day. The Sabbath reminded Israel of God's sufficiency and supply. That's what we're going to see at the beginning and at the end and all throughout, that the Sabbath principle is ultimately about trust. That's why it's there. To trust that God is the one who takes care of you. Psalm 62, my soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from Him. Find rest, O my soul, in God alone. So Leviticus, or Exodus 16 rather, there's this principle of rest. Leviticus 23 verse 3 calls the Sabbath a day of sacred assembly. These are the twin engines of what the Sabbath was about. It was for rest and worship. We rest that we would be free to worship God, and we give God worship by trusting Him enough to rest from our labors. I mentioned Exodus 16, the first commandment they were given after they had come out of the Red Sea as a nation. Exodus 31, the last command that is given to Moses before he comes down from the mountain, also has to do with the Sabbath. It's a sign of the covenant in the Mosaic dispensation. So the Sabbath was a holy day set apart. You weren't to do on the Sabbath what you did on every other day. That was the point of God's rest. It wasn't that God got tired, but He set it aside as a different day. So to profane the Sabbath in the Old Testament was to treat it as ordinary. You desecrated the Sabbath when you treated it like it was Tuesday. And in the Mosaic covenant, Sabbath keeping brought blessings, Sabbath breaking brought curses. And God was training His people about trust. The Sabbath forced them to stop working so they could rest in God's work. And this brought God glory because then He could prove that He was the one responsible for their provision, for their sustenance, for their salvation, for their sanctification. Ezekiel 20, verses 11 and 12 says, I gave them my Sabbath as a sign between us so they would know that I, the Lord, made them holy. That God set them apart. That God was sanctifying them. It's a very humbling thing to not do anything. That was the point. Fast forward to the Gospels. How does Jesus treat the Sabbath? He didn't break any of the Sabbath commands. But He did not hesitate to break the traditions and the customs of the Jews. There's a number of different passages. Again, we don't have time to read them. I'll just mention them. In Mark 2, this is the incident where the disciples on the Sabbath picked heads of grain. And Jesus points out, well, this isn't different than David and his men eating the consecrated bread in the days of Abiathar the high priest. And the point Jesus makes is, number one, the Sabbath was made for man, so it's a gift. It's not supposed to be an oppressive burden. It's a gift to us. And point number two, Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. In Mark 3, Jesus heals a man with a shriveled hand on the Sabbath. The point there is that we ought to do good. It's a day for doing good. In Luke 13, He heals a crippled woman. The point Jesus wants to make is that the Sabbath is a day for freedom. He sets the woman free. In Luke 14, He heals a man suffering from dropsy. And the point is that the Sabbath is a day for healing. So Jesus is not break the Old Testament law, but He breaks some of their pretensions and some of their customs, and He wants to make sure they understand that the Sabbath was not supposed to be about oppressive external burdens. It was supposed to be about a grace to them, that they would trust God and He would deliver. So you have creation, you have Mosaic, and you have Jesus, which are all sort of building and shaping our understanding. And it leaves us with the basic question, is there transference or not with the fourth commandment? Can you just say, Christians must obey the fourth commandment just as they did in the Old Testament? The only way I can answer it, I think, with some biblical integrity is to say there is discontinuity and some continuity. And if you think that that's a weaselly way out, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a different way out. Let me show you some of the passages of discontinuity. Go to Romans chapter 14. Romans chapter 14, verse 5. This is where Paul is talking about Christian liberty. He says, one person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in the honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God. While the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord and gives thanks to God. Talking about the Jewish holy days, and it seems a reasonable inference that the Sabbath would be one of those. But Paul is saying that there's Christian liberty now in how you esteem this day. Look at another passage. Go over to Galatians chapter 4. Galatians 4, verse 8. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not gods. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to be once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years. Now the Galatians are a little bit different than the Romans. They were observing them as their means of justification. This is what made them right with God, as they observed these days and years. And that's not what Paul wants. Even clearly, one more passage, Colossians chapter 2. That's my child, so it's okay. Colossians chapter 2, verse 16. Therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink. So that's the unclean food laws, Leviticus 11 and elsewhere, or with regard to a festival, or a new moon, or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. So, I don't see how you can escape the conclusion that we are not bound by the Jewish Mosaic Sabbath. And even the most earnest Sabbath keepers among us, and there are often some in Reformed circles, I think you'd be hard-pressed to say you really want to have all of the Sabbath laws, including the stonings, and you can't carry sticks, and all of that from the Old Testament. I think it intuitively we sense there is something different now since the coming of Christ. Martin Luther, always good to say something a little outrageous. If anywhere the day is made holy for the mere day's sake, if anywhere anyone sets up its observance on a Jewish foundation, then I order you to work on it, to ride on it, to dance on it, to feast on it, to do anything that shall remove this encroachment on Christian liberty. There's Martin Luther and the Sabbath. So there's discontinuity. Now let me give you some reasons why I think it's not just all null and void. There is some continuity. First is go back to creation. That if indeed there is a principle there of rest in keeping with God's rest, then we can't just brush it aside. Second, in John 20, in Luke 24, in Matthew 16, these are the accounts of the resurrection. And it says that Jesus rose te demia ton sabbaton. Sabbaton can be translated Sabbath. It's also the word in Greek for week. And so most of the English translations have something like on the first day of the week, Sunday. But the word mia, which is the word one, is not the word first, though that's the implication. It's not a bad translation. But it is a different kind. I forget always if it's ordinal or cardinal, but the different kinds of numbers. This is the word one, on the one of the Sabbath. And many commentators see that there is a conscious reckoning of this resurrection day as the Sabbath plus one, that what we have in Easter is a new creation. We have a new day that is not the Sabbath, but it is the Sabbath plus one, that the first day of the week, there is some kind of transference. We see in Acts 20, verse 7, that the Christians gathering on the first day of the week for worship. In 1 Corinthians 16, Paul tells them to set aside an offering on the first day of the week. And importantly, Revelation 1, verse 10 has this phrase that John seems to have maybe even made up, Kuriake Hemera, the Lord's Day. And from that time on, it's clear that this is a term used for Sunday. So what's my conclusion? There's this discontinuity, and then you have this sort of transference. You have this new thing called the Lord's Day. The ceremonial aspect of the Sabbath, to me, I would say, has been abolished. It has been fulfilled in Christ. The Mosaic Covenant was meant to reinforce the creation principle that we rest from our labors and trust in God. We'll say more about this at the end. The principle at work in the Sabbath is fulfilled in Christ, namely, that we do not rely on ourselves, but on God. So I would say that the binding nature of Sabbath observance has been removed, but having said that, I do believe there are certain principles of Sabbath rest that remain and seem to have been quickly appropriated on this new day called the Lord's Day. Okay, you can think of it like this. Three different views of the Sabbath in the church. There's view number one, which is Christian Sabbath. And I respectfully disagree with the Westminster Confession of Faith. I think it overstates its case. If any of you are familiar with the language, that Sunday is the Christian Sabbath, just almost like it was for the Jews. So that's one view. That's the Sabbath, same thing, just a different day. Another view is the oblivious view, which many of us may have. Most Americans do not even think about Sunday. It doesn't even cross their mind. If they're, you know, good Christians, they go to church, and you all are here a second time. But for most people, the commandment doesn't enter their mind. It's irrelevant. God's rest after creation is completely inconsequential. Now, what I would argue for is a third view, the Lord's Day, where it's not the Sabbath in the same way, but some of those principles are carried over. Interestingly, because you often maybe think, you know, Reformed circles are really about the Sabbath. Interestingly, Calvin and his heirs, and we'll read this in the Heidelberg Catechism at the very end, they were not strict Sabbatarians. They did not argue for a very strict observance of the Sabbath. The Puritans were, but the early Reformers, by and large, were not. Here's what Calvin said. Since this commandment, the fourth commandment, has a particular consideration distinct from the others, it requires a slightly different order of exposition. The early fathers customarily called this commandment a foreshadowing because it contains the outward keeping of a day which, upon Christ's coming, was abolished with the other figures. This they say truly, but they touch upon only half the matter. Hence we must go deeper and ponder three conditions in which it seems to me the keeping of this commandment consists. And so that's what I want to talk about now. These three conditions, I might say three principles of continuity from the Sabbath to the Lord's Day. Three Sabbath principles that I think we still want to pray about and apply with Christian liberty. The first Sabbath principle is that it is fitting for one day in seven to be appointed a day set aside for worship. We saw that in Leviticus 23. There are 6 days when you may work, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, a day of sacred assembly. In the New Testament, we see that synagogue worship was a regular part of the Jewish Sabbath. That was their corporate worship service. That's what the day was set aside for. And after the resurrection, The day for corporate worship in the church slides very seamlessly. We don't have a lot of talk about fights over it. It seems to have been a natural sort of slide that Jesus rose again on Sunday and we're going to worship on Sunday. And they did not hesitate to call it the Lord's Day, maybe looking at it as a kind of first among equals in the week because it celebrated Jesus' triumph over death. So I think we would be wise to continue to say that here's a day God's given us to worship. And as Pat often reminds us, and I remind you too, every Sunday is a kind of Easter Sunday. It's a resurrection Sunday. That's why we gather, to commemorate Jesus conquering the grave. And let me just give you, to make this sort of practical, some concrete suggestions in the vein of Christian liberty, but some suggestions for how to make this day a day set aside for worship. Most obviously, and this is maybe more than a suggestion, is you should make corporate worship a priority. You should come every week. You get sick, I know stuff happens, but as a rule, you come every week. I mean, you do want to celebrate the resurrection with your brothers and sisters. I would dare say that the discipline of corporate worship is even more important than the discipline of private worship. Another way to honor the day for worship, I like to use the phrase, think of Sunday as climax and not collapse. So many of us, and this happens to college students, Sunday is just a collapse. Man, I was up till 3 in the morning last night, and I was up Friday night till 4 in the morning and slept till noon, and now it's just Sunday and crash, and all the homework I didn't do on Friday night and didn't do on Saturday. When instead it should be, here's what the whole week is building to. Not just, I got to hear a sermon. It's building to the resurrection. Jesus is alive. This is what my whole life is about. My whole week has been building to this. And so you want to be prepared. You want to think how you spend your Saturday nights. You want to try to come on time. You want to be prayed. You want to be ready to go. I mentioned this before. I know what it's like, the few times a year when I don't preach. You know, because when I preach every Sunday, that by necessity focuses me. So I come on Sunday and I'm filled up with prayer and study and Bible and get up early. And when I don't preach, it's easy to, I could probably stay up late. I could probably watch that. I could probably get up at 8 and roll out of bed and just come here. But it makes a difference on how you worship. So you want to prepare. And I'd also challenge you, and this is really not the place to do it, but I would challenge you to have a good reason if you don't come to evening church. So you can all pat yourself on the back, I guess. There's nothing in the Bible that I'm aware of that says you have to have church twice or you have to come twice. But I would encourage people to think, if I'm not coming, is there a good reason? I mean, young kids have to be in bed at 6:30. That could be a reason. You play the piano at the nursing home on Sunday nights. I'll give you that. You do a neighborhood Bible study, or your family has family worship. I mean, there are other reasons. I want it to be something that the people here that we wrestle with, all the Sunday morning people, you just wrestle with, is, if I'm not going, is there a good reason I have? Or might it be that this is a good opportunity to make it the Lord's day and not just the Lord's morning? The good things that you have been meaning to do, you do them on the Lord's day. That's what it means to set aside the day for worship. You have a good Christian book. I just don't have time. Man, I can't read my Bible. I'm just barely doing a chapter and I want to read more. I want to pray with my spouse. I wish I could go sing with my kids. Sunday is a good day to try to do that. Sunday is the day the Lord has given you to attend to your soul. That's what I think is most important. That you look at it. Is this a day I'm using to attend to my soul? If you had a physical sickness, you would fight it. You would go to the doctor. You'd get on the internet. You'd see what the symptoms are. You'd call your insurance company. Will you pay for this experimental procedure? You'd fly over the world and the country to get the best treatment. Can I beat this thing? I'm physically sick. But too often we get a spiritual cancer in our soul. We barely have a spiritual pulse going through our veins. And if somebody says, do something, you say, oh, it's too hard. Well, this is the day the Lord's given you as a cure. Because we spend so much time in soul shriveling activities. And He says, here's a day, not of oppression, of freedom. Here's a day your soul can breathe, it can grow. You have freedom, you can worship. That's the first principle. Here's the second. The second principle is trusting in Christ enough to stop one day in seven and rest. And some of you, this sounds burdensome. You got to be careful. All of a sudden, I go back and saying, we're going to judge each other by observance of days, which is what Paul says we're not supposed to do. But think of it as a day of grace to you. The Sabbath was made for man. God's given you a day. It's not a day of gloom, it's a day of gladness. Now, I know people don't always look at it that way. Amos 8, verse 5. Here's what the people were saying. When will the new moon be over that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath be ended that we may market wheat? Isn't that how we feel? When will Sunday be over? I can do something. I can get to work. I can be productive. I remember growing up, lots of different rules. I won't get into all of them. They involve not sweating and things like that on Sunday. But I'm thankful for my parents' rules. Some that, I shouldn't say mom and dad listen to these sermons sometimes. Some had some inconsistency. I love you, mom and dad. But I do remember counting down the minutes until I could get out of my room when I was supposed to be taking my Sunday nap and just watching it. And, you know, then the one time in your life when they force you to take naps, you hate them. And then the rest of your life, you just wish you could always take them, and you never can. So it feels like a burden. And sometimes Christians have made it a burden. In New England, in colonial days, there were 39 pages of Sabbath laws in small print. John Owen, who was a Puritan himself, said, a man can scarcely in 6 days read over all the duties that are proposed to be observed on the seventh. It's true. It was meant to be a blessing for us. So why is resting one day important, even in the New Testament age? It's important simply because it is an expression of trust. That was the driving force in the Old Testament. You don't treat it like every other day. You don't make your servants work. You don't go out and get manna. God will take care of you. Just watch. Don't do anything. Worship. Pray. We poignantly and practically symbolize our trust in God when we stop one day in seven. There's a story told one day. I'm not sure if it was a Sunday. I'm guessing maybe it was. Philip Melanchthon, who was Luther's right-hand man. Philip Melanchthon turned to Luther and said, today, you and I shall discuss the governance of the universe. To which Luther replied, no, today you and I shall go fishing and leave the governance of the universe to God. Which is the idea of the Sabbath. We need to testify to our commitment that we believe in God's provision. And resting one day in seven is a weekly bulletin to ourselves and to others. Hear ye, I believe God can meet my needs. He is sovereign. He is in control. He can do it without me for one day. It's for our good. Ben Patterson says, what do we lose when we lose the Sabbath? He says, we lose grace. We lose grace. I've talked about this before, and probably say it again because I just want college students, especially high school students, to consider this. You know, some of my friends, we just challenge each other and not to do homework on Sunday. And I just look back of all the decisions I made in college, and that's one of the top two or three best decisions I made. No homework. Study for my tests on Saturday. Get up Monday morning and study. Because there's no other day that you woke up and said, today is a day of get to, not have to. I don't have to. I'm going to go to church. And we were church junkies. And so we went to Sunday school and went to more church and went to chapel church. And then we played Ultimate Frisbee. It was a great day. I always look forward to it. It was the best day of the week. It's grace. So we're not to judge each other on days. I want you to hear that. And I also want you to consider, if the Sabbath principle, if that's something hardwired in creation, then you are meant to not work all the time. I challenge you. You don't just see. Can you get more done in 6 days than seven? I mean, I've said to people before, sometimes what I'd like to do is, you know, if you get two construction crews and say they had to build a skyscraper and they had a year to do as much work as they could. If I was the foreman for this group, give them a day off. Maybe two, but at least a day. And this group working for a year, no days off. Who do you want to put your money on, since we're not on the commandment, do not bet. But who do you want to put your money on that's going to get more of that skyscraper done? I'm going to say the people that are getting a day off. That's how you're meant to be. You're more productive. So what do we do on a day of rest? Well, we do good. We see this modeled in Jesus. We do what is necessary. The Westminster Confession calls it duties of necessity and mercy. So I'm glad, you know, there's doctors at the hospital and Greta can come there. So you do good. You do what's necessary. You don't look for loopholes. It's a grace to you, so don't bother, you know, don't bother trying to keep the Lord's Day for your pastor. You know, do it because you believe it'll be a grace. And we can't be legalistic. In Acts chapter 20, we read about Paul preaching to this house church at night. This is where Eutychus falls out and he dies, a long sermon, and brings him back to life, which is a good thing to do. And some scholars think that maybe they were meeting at night because they had to work during the day, which is plausible. And here's where we can't be too rigid about it, because we still live in the Western world with a lot of this residue of a Christian heritage, and so most of us can take Sunday off. You live in a Muslim country and it's just another day, and Christians have to find some time to worship on that day. So we don't want to be legalistic about it, especially for brothers and sisters in other contexts. But the principle is that you need a day off. Set apart a day.